Okay, so I mean about environment being more powerful than willpower. It depends on training, depends on association practice. Means in general, the environment will control, you'll be controlled by your environment. But the environment that you're in is actually generated from your own desire. So you're in that environment because that's what you wanted. So by your previous actions, then you end up in that environment. So it's taken as more powerful because it's actually what you wanted. You wanted to be in that environment. So then if you want to change that, you have to change it by your work now. And so if you have the proper knowledge, the proper association, proper practice, with time you can change how you deal with that environment, which will then change your future environment. Does that make sense? So that's why association and practice is so important, like that. Then it will come, that's also why it's said that the Brahman doesn't berate himself at a failure, you know, because you're used to doing something a certain way, so then if it goes wrong, then okay, now how to correct this, and then you work on it. And then if that didn't work, then you contemplate it again and try again. Because feeling bad that I didn't do it won't get any result. It gets a feeling, you know, but it's a feeling of lamentation. So that's a Shudra. So a Brahmana says, okay, if this didn't work, I try this. If that didn't work, I try this. And you keep going. So it's not that one's callous and it doesn't matter if something goes wrong. No, one's very aware, but one doesn't get distracted by the mode of ignorance and dwell upon it. It's just a matter of, okay, what wasn't right, how to correct that. You know, what is right, how to maintain that. Because otherwise, if you lament, you don't do anything. So that means even the good points, you don't do. So it can't be progressive. You know, I mean, it's modern society thinks it's a really good situation, you know, that's really how you're going to purify yourself, is by the mode of ignorance. But that's why Krishna says in the Gita that irreligion is taken as religion and religion is taken as irreligion. So to sit around lamenting and doing nothing, that's actually sinful. It's irreligious, though it's considered the best possible way to purify yourself in the present, you know, modern politically correct first world culture. Or so-called culture. So it's philosophically doesn't work. Materially it doesn't work. Because you'll see, except for the people who use political correctness are successful. The people who live political correctness are always a failure. So what do? They surround themselves with other politically correct persons. Because then you can, you know, support each other. But actually, if you check, nothing is getting done. Because it's not a lifestyle. Lifestyle is in Dharma. Political correctness is in Artha. Right? Kings use political correctness, you know, like that, because it gets their work done. It's not considered actually a main method. It's a method you have to use because you're dealing in an environment where people are like that. In other words, if someone's religious, you deal religiously. But if someone's not religious, then you deal with niti. Because niti is just the ethics of dealing with the environment to get what you want done. Because what they don't consider is that niti, it considers the ethics of what you should do and the qualities. But it doesn't. But its ultimate goal is getting your work done. So as long as you got your work done, they don't really care how they got it. That's why you'll see the person so politically correct and nice and worried and caring about a particular group or a particular situation. But in another situation, they're very hard-hearted and very intolerant. Because that's niti. Dharma is you're dealing in a situation. You know, like Arjuna is saying, is the you have superiors. So even if they're creating problems, you go with it. Is Yudhishthira ever criticized for having accepted going to the gambling match because his superior Dhritarashtra wanted it? No. But niti is you do whatever you have to get done. Duryodhana uses niti. Niti is you destroy your enemy to the root. then they won't come up again. Because if you're kind to them and are compassionate and lead them, at some point then that may grow and create problem for you. Right? So their idea is we send to the house of lack, kill them. Right? Then problem solved. Right? That's niti. So you'll see is on one side they're so nice and everything, but on the other side they're that harsh. So that's how you can tell what level they're dealing on. Otherwise, dharma means there'll be a consistency. It always has that particular good qualities are consistent through it, even if it means they're lost. Right? It means you see in the Bhagavatam of the Vedic literature, kings will lose kingdoms to maintain their dignity. But in niti, you lose your dignity, who cares? You know, that's the meaning laughing to the bank. You know, you kiss some guy's shoes, you know, below your dignity, but hey, you got $1 million out of it. You're laughing while that other guy with all this dignity, he still has nothing. So that's why does that come? Because niti is the thing. That's the Vaishya platform is niti. So that's all it is. It's a combination between Vaishya economic culture with Shudra mentality.
What about people who value integrity, but they're outside of any big paradigm?
But then the point is it's good, but that integrity has to have a connection to the Lord, otherwise it won't be consistent in its application. So that's why you see, you know, there's integrity on one level, but then on another level he maintains that integrity, and then, let's say he's supposed to protect his family, and his family's done something wrong. You know, so he has very good integrity, he does something wrong, he takes responsibility and this and that. But now his family does something wrong. Now, instead of protecting them, he demands that they be also of this stature, and then, you know, and then in this way they get lost. So that's not actual real integrity. This means it's a higher level. In other words, the within this field of artha, then the morality or ethics is stronger than, you know, it's more prominent than economics or justice. You know, or it may be justice is the thing. You have to see what's its basis. Oh, it's right. Why is it right? See, dharma means it's right because that's the inherent nature. A Brahman has a particular nature. He is knowledgeable. He's absorbed in knowledge. He's always trying to affect his life according to that knowledge. So if something goes wrong, what do you have to do? Correct his knowledge or give him support in which he can function well within his knowledge. Right. But let's say another person, the Shudra, he's not so absorbed in knowledge, it's just his feelings and all that. So therefore, if both of them did the same wrong, there would be a difference in how you deal with the Shudra and the Brahman. Mana, oh no, but that's not equal. No, because they're not equal. One values knowledge, one doesn't. So therefore, there's a difference in how you deal. You know, one's more into emotions and that, the other's not. So therefore, you talk to the Shudra, it'll be more emotional. You talk to the Brahman, it'll be more intellectual. Otherwise, then, you know, there should be only one kind of animal food, right? You know, you just have one can and that's it. You know, you feed your cat with it, your dog, your parakeet, you know, your lizard, you know, everybody eats the same thing. That would be real democracy, right? But, you know, then they'll say, well, that's absurd, so why is the other absurd? Why is dealing with someone who inherently has a different nature? That means they can't identify nature. That means it's below, it's sub-dharma, upadharma. And Bhagavatam kicks that out in the second verse. So for devotees to use Upadharma as the real Krishna conscious culture, it's lack of knowledge, poor fund of knowledge, is probably would put it. Right? So therefore the environment does have an effect, but the environment is created by oneself in past activities, and according to Dharma, Artha, Karma, or Moksha, then there's ways to deal with it. So you have to decide what level you're going to work at. Because to say political correctness is the only way to deal, that's one out of four. Right? You know, you also have Kama. You know, so all these, they're politically correct, but neither do they get money, neither do they get any sense gratification, neither do they actually have any position that people respect. What do you get? According to Shastra, that's called foolish. It said if a man has money and he's a miser, it's sad because neither he enjoys it, nor his relatives, nor does he give it in charity. So it's actually, it's as good as if he had no money because he can't use it. So if someone can't engage their senses and the sense objects according to religious principles, that's sad. And if they think, well, this is Krishna conscious to not do that, no, that's impersonalism. Personalism means person has senses. That way it makes them a person, right? A rock doesn't have senses. That's the difference, right? Because they'll say, oh, no, it's life, but life means senses. So the problem is the senses and the sense object connected to Krishna. That's great. Senses and sense objects not connected to Krishna. That's the problem. But it's not senses and sense objects that's the problem. It's whether it's connected to Krishna or not. So to think that it's on its own it stands, then that's lower consciousness. That's simply that the morality and all that is all there is. It means lack of spiritual vision. Even lack of religious vision. Right? So it's sad because Prabhupada wanted that the devotees would study his books. That was his only complaint. My disciples don't read my books. He didn't have any other complaint. You know. And now, see, the problem before is they didn't read any book. They should have been reading Prabhupada's book, but they didn't read it. But now, they don't read Prabhupada's books, but they read other books. So then that's worse, not better. You know. So. Is that okay? Is that kind of deal with that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead. Yes.
You touched upon this in your class, that's why it's an old question I have. Living in India, as we all who have worked in India for any length of time, we have noticed that there are two words or two concepts that just seem to be foreign to the Indian culture. Even though the word is there, like for example in Bengali, Kamakorun, sorry, please forgive me. And the other one is, excuse me. So these two words in India, even though they exist, we hardly ever hear them. So I heard someone justify that. It's not part of the culture, but we have another way of saying of expressing. Now I wonder whether for us Westerners, on the other hand, we are very particular about saying sorry and what is the other one? And apologizing. But is it a sort of nicety that is actually superficial? And on the other hand, it is the lack of it in India a sign of degradation, or is it a cultural
thing? Okay, so then dealing with the seeming lack of social consideration that one may see within the Indian environment. So is that just that's the way the culture is, or is that just a degradation?
Is it a remnant of Vedic culture?
See, the difficulty is the India that you've seen is not actually the India. Because what you know is rickshaw wallahs, ladies from Taranpur wash your clothes, you know, a taxi driver, maybe a guy in a shop. But the people who are what we would call the natural leaders within India, they're so sensitive that if you just for a moment looked away, they would catch that and think you're getting bored or you have something else to do, depending on where you looked and what you were. You know, you look towards the door, you have to go, you look at your watch, oh, is the time late? They'll make you feel uncomfortable that they're so refined and so careful and so sensitive. So these people, devotees, don't see anymore. So spending time in India means like living here. It's almost like living anywhere in the world, you know. It's just there's a few more trees, okay? You walk out, you know, under the street in New York, there's less trees, you know, but here there's more trees. But otherwise, it's not that much different in the way of lifestyle values and all that. But in the 70s, 80s, especially 70s, you had to live with that class of people. So the first people that were being included and made members were the most rich, influential, and cultured people within India. So those who were here at that time, you see that they've developed that. And then later now, then nobody really works in that level of people. Hardly, you know, you see some temples do it, like Chaupati does and Pune, at least they have. But other places, that's not the generally the culture that's being worked at. So in other words, you have to know culture to see it. You know, it's like a street urchin, you know, you show him a Prada bag, it's shiny, so it means he thinks it's more shiny than the other bag I stole, so I could probably get more for it, but it doesn't mean anything to it. So it's a matter of being able to see the culture like that. The other thing is you have the element that the Western culture is highly intolerant, and because they don't want any disturbance for themselves, then on the more sophisticated level, you want to make sure you don't disturb someone else because you don't want them to disturb you. So that's the impetus for it. But you'll see that's only in those who are more sophisticated. Right? Means, you know, you have some guy on the, you know, just on the street, he doesn't worry about it too much, just like an Indian. But the Indians are very tolerant. You know, it's like 50 of them will come in, and, like you're got on the train, right? And you don't have a seat, but you somehow know to get your seat there with, you know, there's five of them on the seat, you get in there. They're tolerant, they allow that. But, you know, you're sitting there with, you have, let's say you have all three seats there, right? You have three tickets and you have three seats. And an Indian tries to get in there, forget it. Right? So, therefore, that's where you can see the symptoms, and it's just different. You can see the symptoms where it's different. So, now that's just a matter of lack of sophistication. As you move up and they're more sophisticated. But the majority of India is not that sophisticated. Because the village, previously there were more sophistication in the village, more of that. But with time, with poverty and all that, then the good qualities have gone.
In many ways in the city things are worse.
Of course, but I'm just saying is that there you have the sophistication, so there they get you, but it's more subtle, right? You know, the village is more obvious. You know, so so it's just a matter of its degradation in culture. One time, I'm not sure if it was Bhavananda, he was saying that sometimes we think that, you know, Calcutta's way behind, you know, it's so dirty and so falling apart. He says it's actually the cutting edge city on the planet. He says, give it another 50 years and all the major cities of the world will look like Calcutta. Right, you know, every futuristic movie, they're all like Calcutta, you know, like that. So it's just a matter of perspective, you know. No, it's not. It's just that they'll be very tolerant on one side, but not because of the lack of sophistication and not very sensitive. But the tolerance makes up for it. So they don't bother each other. You know, so their tolerance is great, but let's say their social, what do you call it? Not social ethic. Civic ethic? No, there's some particular term for it. It just means their, you know, ability to, okay, I don't throw garbage because it's, you know, you don't do that. You know, this is the environment we're living in. So the West, they're very good at that, but very intolerant. And in India, they'll be, you know, don't care about that, but be more concerned about the person or something like that. So, you know, they'll bump into you and, oh, you know, like this and that, but the Western won't bump into you, you know. So it depends on the culture. Like in Bengal, you walk down Mahatma Gandhi Road, there's thousands of people, no one will bump into you if you're a little careful. But in Delhi, you can be walking down a sidewalk that's, you know, 10 feet wide and there's only two people on it, they will bump into you. It's just a different culture, right? They're just not aware as much. So you're also going to see very much a difference in what you see in Bengal, what you see in North India, what you see in South India. They're also very distinct in their kind of cultural.
But there's so much praising of tolerance, but can't tolerance be insane? Like, for example, in India, they tolerate loud sounds in microphones in public.
But that's just what they do. If someone else is having fun, okay, Hari Bol. You know, that's their thing. You know, it's like that. But the West, they wouldn't do that because. So that's the thing. It's just a difference in the culture, like that. You know, the basic inherent principles, but it's not being applied properly. But still, it's something to work from. Now, if you make them conscious, they already understand the personal elements and all that. Then it works very well.
Sound is way too loud.
Yeah, but the point is what I said before, they're not sophisticated. You're dealing with villagers here. When Prabhupada came to the temple, what was Bhaktisiddhanta's comment? A city boy. He was impressed. Prabhupada was a city boy, right? And Keshav Maharaj and Odalomi, you know, they're brothers. They were, you know, from a Kshatriya stock. You know, so, you know, they managed the whole Gaudiya Mat. You know, so it would be different. But otherwise, everybody else is villagers. So that means you have to train them in this. They're not already trained. City person gets trained in these things. But the village doesn't as much. You know, they sit, you know, right next to each other and shout like that. It's just the way it is, you know. You wonder, well, who are they talking to? No, they're just talking to the guy sitting right next to them. And it's not Europeans facing either, you know. They're right there, you know. So it's just the way they are. You know, it's like kids. Kids make a lot of noise. You know, but as they grow into adults, they make a little, at least in those situations, less noise, you know. Does that make sense? So it's just a matter of just appreciating what's there, what their basis is, and what they're dealing with. So one is humble tolerant, and then one will get by. Because if one is humble and tolerant, then you can work in either world. You know? You know, because the saying you're sorry and all is supposed to be a symptom of humility and consideration. Like that. So if you have that, but then they're intolerant, you know. So if you have that and tolerance, that's really nice. You know. Yeah, that's the point. You know. And then respect and not looking for yourself. So if you have those four, that's the real culture.
Prabhupada was saying, Prabhupada used to apologize. He didn't have a problem apologizing.
Yeah, no. It's just, see, the thing is if it's just a matter of tolerance, then they don't see the reason to. But if it's something that they actually consider it is something, then they're very profuse in their apologies. It's just what they would consider something to apologize for is not necessarily the same. You know? But as I said, you have all these village people that are in the city, so right? It's not like you're walking through the field out there and the guy that's plowing the field, you're walking on that, you know, between the field is that little raised place that he's walking along and bumps into you and knocks you off and then doesn't say anything. No, out there they're quite good at interacting. The problem is when you bring that guy into the city, stand him in the line to get a train ticket, then you have a problem. So it just, it's a natural thing. That's what he's saying, the common people, and they were doing all this stuff for Dhruva Maharaj. They didn't say only the high class like that, because it will mention that if it is. Because sometimes it mentions, you know, Krishna, the common people, and then the leaders and of society, which means, you know, your leaders are the common man. Then, you know, the intellectuals, the administrative leaders, you know, and then the women of the household, and all these different things, it makes the distinction. So in here it's saying the common person. You can see how cultured they were. So, you know, that's the standard. And just due to lack of protection, then they lose their good qualities.
Maharaj?
Yes.
Actually, when your explanation is very, very much stressed how the power of discrimination is vital for our own development of a spiritual life, because it's not only knowledge but philosophical knowledge. So when we see also, for instance, Mother Yasoda is telling Krishna, don't eat earth, eat is to discriminate, right, in the pastime, technically, how this is our particular line, what is good, what is bad, is not the first one. Could you elaborate on the differences of also different classes of Brahmins? Because we find in Vedic culture so many variety, from the Vedas, from impersonal to caste Goswamis and so forth, and how it's also very much required to see in ourselves the eventual because Brahmin, in a general delineation, have those qualities that you specify how interact with society. But within that varna, we find also so much subgradation or divisions, let's say. So the Brahmin who in Krishna consciousness also may have different levels of that particular consciousness, right?
It means you have your Brahman means someone who can learn anything, teach anything. So all the branches of the Vedic literature are taught by Brahmins. You can learn the art from a Shudra, but the science will be learned from a Brahman. He may be also able to teach you the art, just like Dronacharya could teach you the science and art of the martial, you know, the Dhanurveda. But you might just learn, you know, just the art. Like, you know, the ones that learn, you know, the sword fighting and the foot soldiers and all that, they don't learn from Dronacharya. They learn from someone else who's good at their particular interest, you know, or their particular weapon. Right? So that means in any of the Vedic literature, so that means someone will know the Veda itself very well, and that, and then based on that, then you'll have six portions, you know, means there'll be one of four Vedas, or of two, or of three, or of all four. Then you're going to have those who, their pronunciation and knowing the knowledge of how it's pronounced, so they'll be like Udgatas and that, who will chant the mantras for the auspicious ceremonies, or someone who knows the vocabulary well, so they can define and explain. Those who know the grammar, who can understand the mechanics of its working. Those who know the prosody, so the poets and all that, how to put things together and make, you know, like the Digvijayi Brahman, the Kashmir, they're ones who know prosody very well, you know. And so that's their outstanding things. They just produce, you know, verses like that. You know, because there wasn't a discussion, I say this, now explain it. It's not how you can explain. Well, you see with Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that was the explanation was important, not the verse. So therefore he gave 64 meanings to the Atmarama verse. So, okay, this guy knows something, right? So you'll have that, then the application of it into ritual. So those who, that's where it's specifically your smartas, they know the ritual, the kalpa. Or you have those who know the astrology, you know, astronomy, mathematics, these kind of that field. Then you have those who are, they know the philosophy, known as the philosophical understanding, interpretation of the Veda. Then those who are outstanding in the area of civics, so there'll be a Puranika. You know, they can know all the stories, they can explain them, like Romaharshana Sutta, Ugrashrava Sutta. Then you know, so they'll know the Puranas, Itihasas, the Purana Itihas, and can you remember? It's something that's even smaller. It's like a specific pastime. Puranas, all kings, you know, all the whole thing, Pancha Lakshana, Dasa Lakshana, but Itihas means it's only one particular king. Like Ramayana's only on Ram, and Mahabharata's on, you know, the Pandavas. So then the upakyan. Upakyan means one situation, one pastime. So then it gets down to the detail of what was said, exactly what they're wearing, that kind of thing. That's why you have these storytellers that can get into such detail. They know the upakyans. So someone's like that who knows the stories, or someone who knows the Ayurveda, or knows Stapanaveda and Vastu, knows Dhanurveda, right? Or knows the Gandharva Veda, so music, drama, and dance. Or they know Dharma Shastra, or they know Nyaya, right? Should be the Nyayas knows philosophy, but there's those who just know Nyaya, you know? So, and you can get any combination. So these would be your different, you could say, kinds of Brahmins. Then you're going to have Karmakandi and Jnanakandi, right? And that, then you're going to have someone who's a devotee. Right? So it's going to be just what is their nature, and then how they apply the knowledge. They apply it only in preaching and dealing with the devotees of that, or they, you know, in connection with the acharya, or it's in connection with the deities, or it's in connection with the king. Right? So Subdhamadhar is the assistant to an acharya. Right? Then you have, you know, you like your head pujaris and that, so it's in relationship to the deity. And then you have, you know, things like, you know, Birbal and Tanaliram, these other, who are in connection with the king. You know, Chanakya, it's in connection with the king. So then, accordingly, they would also have to have those specific branches of knowledge. Does that make sense? So like that, you get your different kinds of Brahmins. Like that. So you get the most variety there, you could say. You know, like that.
Thank you.
Okay, and then last we have to go is then from. Okay, Srila Prabodhananda Saraswati glorifies Virudhavana. Virudhavana, in Vrindavana. In Virudhavana. Oh, it's probably Vrindavan. Okay, Vrindavana Mahimamrita. Can you explain this mood of Vrindavan Mahimamrita? I don't know it specifically. Just the point is he'll glorify Vrindavan because that's the place in which the Lord's pastimes take place. So it's very glorious because it perfectly will create the environment that goes with the pastimes. Whatever it is Krishna wants to do, then there'll be that exact environment like that. And then here's another. In the purport is said that there was a fight between Krishna and the demigods due to Parijata trees taken from heaven to this planet. Thus the demigods doesn't know everything belongs to Krishna and he is the Supreme Godhead. It would appear not. Because the thing is the demigods are devotees, but they're neophyte devotees. So neophyte devotee can function in Sakam or Nishkam. So at this stage they were functioning in Sakam. Is that Indra's position is special because he has the parijata. Right? Now, if you take it, then someone else has. Now, is it, what's the important thing in the way of, you know, just as a sec, why is Krishna taking this parijata flower? Right? Satyabhama wants it. So to please his wife, and that will, you know, give that status. Now, that'll be, oh, we have a parijata flower, right? Does any other, the queens have parijata flowers? No. Rukmini is the main queen, but Satyabhama has a parijata tree, right? So what's that going to do for in the status, okay? Now, Indra, it's not that he's worried so much about the parijata tree specifically, other than his control and nobody from earth can come and take things. That's there. But who is he trying to impress? Right? Indrani, right? So now it's like, you know, now it's like, before it was only Indra has the parijata tree, and so then she can know in her garden, but now an earthly king has a parijata, and he's sitting there with his wife, you know? So, this is what's going on. So that's the neophyte. The neophyte is performing their duties in connection to Krishna, but they'd be performing those duties even if it wasn't in connection with Krishna. That's the point. They're going to do those things. Now they're a devotee, so they connect it to Krishna. But because of their desire, then they become overwhelmed and then they forget. You know? So that's all. It's just that they're very pious and all that. That's why it's said if someone who takes up devotional service is not very focused, then they end up on the heavenly planets. If you're more focused, you end up being born in a family of devotees. So what does that mean? That means they're basically neophytes. The Madhyamas take birth in devotee families. Right, because they're supposed to preach, right? Not go to Harvard. Yes?
Yes, I have one question. Actually, before you speak about in the culture or with the difference between countries, because I have observed, my English is not so good, first of all. So, I have observed around of my Sudan, my home, you still have many village that choose to people, they still eat meat and fish, all the things, don't follow actually fully the spiritual life. And the people, they come to the temple every day, almost every day. And 2 days ago, I was in one devotee's house, and one disciple, Mataji from Srinathapath, she had we discussed about this, because actually in the Mangala, and in Mataji, they not advised to come to Mangala, because to the people, it's not fully Krishna consciousness, it's not the fully spiritual life, they still do simple activity. Their whole special Mataji is mixed with us. So many Matajis is there, Mangalati, they have to go make mala, Mangalati, make garland, or to kitchen help, or puchari. So we all mix with this Mataji. And the part of the senior, the Prabhus, have the vision, they put one road to the vision, and this army people cannot mix with them, but in the side from Mataji, we all mixed and have now this vision. So this disturbed a lot, many Mataji, and that this Mataji, the Sankhya Prabhupada, she speak about this, and she speak with the Mahaprabhu Chaitanya Das, so this Vaigali devotee, to we ask some help for these kind of things.
The question is, what kind of answer are you looking for? Because this is basically just a managerial question on whether they make a division or not.
What to do with this situation?
But this is a Bhagavatam class. Are you going to understand?
I'm so sorry.
But what I'm saying is, if you philosophically want to understand, is that all spirits, all living entities are pure spirit souls. So the point is if they're conscious enough that they come to the temple and are interacting with Krishna, then that's good. So even if you're going to cook for Krishna, make garlands, you're not contaminated by touching them. You know, that's one of the rules of Pancharatra. Somebody who's come to the temple to see the deity, you're not contaminated by touching them. Otherwise, if that was the case, then how would the pujaris ever get from their house to the deity room without having to take a bath? You know, so these rules are there, Pancharatra mentions. And that's because they're in some way or another remembering the deities. So even they're doing sinful activities or this or that, but still the element of being in contact with the deity is there, so that's the special part. So there's no contamination.
That's okay, but have no discipline.
That's another thing. Discipline's another thing. But then, at the same time, is that we will say, well, they come and they discipline, the lamp goes around and they're running around after it, and that's not good, and that disturbs us as the, you know, temple devotees. But then, at the same time, is we do have, you know, it's not necessarily so common, some of the ladies, they like to dance like crazy, and they're not well-dressed when they do it, and their energies are going all over, and that disturbs the locals. But if we say, that shouldn't be done, it's like, what is this? We're just dancing for Krishna. So they're just coming and taking darshan for Krishna. They just want the lamp. So there should be a consistency. You know? In other words, if culture and discipline is the thing, then put up the rope and the other ladies don't dance like crazy ladies. But they go together. It's not, you can't separate, no, but that's a Western thing and so that, and this is an India, this is just a... No, they're one thing. Discipline's discipline. So, Point is that, you know, that's a consideration on that discipline, that's a matter of the temple management. Understanding, that's a matter of the philosophy. You know what I'm saying? So one has to pick one position or the other, otherwise then it just is something to keep one busy, you know? And it becomes distracting. Because they don't want to come to the temple. They then stand in the back. All those people are not by Prabhupada. You want to get out of the way, no one bothers you, no one bumps into you, go back to where Prabhupada is. But that's not a solution. You know what I'm saying? When the place is full, I don't even bother coming in the front of the pillars. I only stay in the back there. Panchatattva, I stay back. Over in this corner, there's no people over there. They're all in the front trying to get darshan. Point is, they're enthusiastic to get the darshan. And we're thinking, I'm not coming to the temple because there's too many people. So who's Krishna going to favor? The people that want to see him, or the people that, because it's culturally not up to my standard, I'm not going? Krishna says that the gopis, they didn't care about the social standard. They're going. They didn't care what the husbands, wives said. They're going. Doesn't matter what obstacle, right? They're girls, right? Girls, do they like to go outside in the dark into a jungle? Would you be comfortable going out, walking around in the elephant area when it's, you know, dark outside? At night, midnight? No. But they're willing to do that for Krishna. So that's what Krishna looks for. That's why they're here. Because they want to see the deity. And we want under certain conditions only. So that's why they're there. And you're not going to get rid of them. Right? So one has to look at it is that there's the discipline is discipline. Spiritual understanding, then that's another thing. That's what we'll have, they won't have. So if it's really a problem, stand in the back. That's what I do. You know what I'm saying? So I don't worry about the robe, the this, the that. Why should I be dependent upon some hired guy, whether he put up the robe or not? As an independent devotee, I make the arrangements. The Shunga Arti, I stand in the courtyard. Tulsi Arti, I stand over in the corner between the two temples. Nobody's there. There's always a place, even the place is packed, you can't walk. There are places where nobody's there. Because all neophytes think in the same way. I only get benefit the closer I am to the deities. They all think that way. So therefore, then you look at it, let them do that. I can take darshan from farther back. Right? Radha Madhava from 70 feet away are still Radha Madhava. Not the only from 20 feet, then they're Radha Madhava. Because at the same time is, what happens in after the pujari, now they stopped it, but if you were here before, when the pujari would throw the flowers, what would happen on the altar? I mean, on the stage? All the grihasthas, cute little madhouse, untrained kids would go running up there and run around, and everybody would go, oh, so cute. No Indian would allow their kid to do that. It's undisciplined. It's uncultured. You don't do that. But we'll say, oh, that's fine. But the Indians bustling through, then that's a lack of discipline and culture. And says, this is the problem. We're supposed to come here to learn the good qualities that they have, not to impose upon them our bad qualities. So our kids can run around and be crazy. We can dance and be completely crazy. But, you know, the locals, then, you know, they have to be controlled. No, if you're going to control everything. If you're not going to control the other, don't control anything. Yes, confirmed. You know what I'm saying? So that's what I'm saying is that one has to take it from, you know, a political thing to culture, you know, to philosophy. Then you'll have it. So philosophically, okay, that's the way it is. I'm a devotee, I'm humble, I go stand somewhere, I'll make arrangements and find some way. Right? Like that. Because you want to walk from Panchatattva temple over to get darshan of Radha Madhava. Then the place is crowded. What do? Walk around behind Prabhupada, come down that little thing, and then skirt by that little desk, and then back up, and then around to the back again. It works. There's nobody there. Doesn't matter how crowded it is, you can always walk that way. No, no, we have to be in the front, because we're senior, we're this, that. These are all upadhis. That's all material. Oh, the men have it, why don't we have it? Okay. So if we want to make everything equal, you know, he's wearing all white. Do you wear white every day? Yeah, you wear white every day? Right? You wear white every day? Ever changes much? No. So, you try wearing it. We're going to make equal, why not that? Or, let them wear the nice saris as dhotis and chadars and earrings and, you know, let them go for it, you know. You can all carry man bags, you know, all that kind of stuff, you know. Cool. Right? But no, we're comfortable that equal is only where we consider that there'll be some control and enjoyment that we're missing out on. That's the only point of contention. Right? The brahmacharya, the new bhaktas all go around and pick up garbage, clean the toilets and all that. So the ladies are, how come that only the men get to do that? Why don't we get to do that? No. So what are they targeting? Dressing a deity that everybody will see. Right? Performing a yajna that everybody will see. Giving a class that everybody's there. And then being a guru. Or being a Jew. Why? Because these are all seen. Are the women fighting? We want to be, you know, secretary of the temple. We want to be treasures of the temple. Why only the men are treasures? Never comes up. You know, why is it only the men are washing the pots? Why can't we wash the pots? Doesn't happen. Why? Because there's no material gain in it. So as I'm saying, you want to make it equal? Make it equal. Otherwise, drop it and everybody should act according to the nature. Right? So that means women in public control themselves. They can be as crazy as they want at home. And men in public may be crazy and they have to control themselves at home. That's the way it is. You know, you want to be as crazy as the men in public, then that means they can be as self-centered and all about them at home as they want. But that doesn't work. So that means you want everything you have plus everything everybody else has. That's called greed. That's not called equal, that's called greed. Right? In other words, at the home, everything's going the way the lady wants it. And then the man has a little bit of independence. Now the wife wants 50% of that. That's not equal. Of course, the men are a bit stupid. They don't understand this. But the women are going for 50% of what the men have, not 50% overall. Does this make some sense, sir? Yeah, so in other words, then it's balanced. Otherwise, then Krishna consciousness just gets caught up in all these different social and political things that are so important to the modern person that actually don't mean anything to anybody anywhere else. Does that make sense? Okay. So, unfortunately, time, I have a meeting at 10.
Something for 1 minute.
It means that if you can say it in one sentence and don't mind a few word answer, what's that? Lord Chaitanya comes every day of every month, every Kali Yuga, but that will be a Vishnumurti.
Yeah, I mean Lord Chaitanya.
But Swayam Lord Chaitanya will come once in the day of Brahma when Krishna comes, Swayam Krishna comes. So whenever Swayam Krishna comes, then the Dwapara and the Treta switch, and then the next Kali Yuga, then Lord Chaitanya comes. Otherwise, all the others is Dwapara is the second age, and Kali is the third. But then if it's that much difference, you know, it's like 5,000 years ago, 500 years ago, they kind of go together. But, you know, how you say 3 million years ago and, you know, 500 years ago, it doesn't quite. Okay? Yeah, okay, sorry. Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki, Chaitanya Gaura Premananda ki.
Yeah.